merge in a gloomy cellar with a vaulted stone ceiling. Much of the castle was connected underground, and the kitchen keep was no exception. Tyrion waddled along a long dark passageway until he found the door he wanted, and pushed through. Within, the dragon skulls were waiting, and so was Shay.
"I thought my lord had forgotten me."
Her dress was draped over a black tooth near as tall as she was, and she stood within the dragon's jaws, nude. "Balerion," he thought. Or was it Vhagar? One dragon skull looked much like another. Just the sight of her made him hard. "Come out of there."
"I won't." She smiled her wickedest smile. "My lord will pluck me from the dragon's jaws, I know." But when he waddled closer, she leaned forward and blew out the taper. "She?" He reached, but she spun and slipped free. "You have to catch me." Her voice came from his left. "My lord must have played monsters and maidens when he was little."
"Are you calling me a monster?"
"No more than I'm a maiden."
She was behind him, her steps soft against the floor.
"You need to catch me, all the same."
He did, finally, but only because she let herself be caught. By the time she slipped into his arms, he was flushed and out of breath from stumbling into dragon skulls. All that was forgotten in an instant when he felt her small breasts pressing against his face in the dark, her stiff little nipples brushing lightly over his lips and the scar where his nose had been. Tyrion pulled her down onto the floor.
"My giant," she breathed as he entered her. "My giant's come to save me."
After, as they lay entwined amongst the dragon skulls, he rested his head against her, inhaling the smooth, clean smell of her hair.
"We should go back," he said reluctantly. "It must be near dawn. Sansa will be waking." "You should give her dream wine," Shay said, "like Lady Tender does with lollies. A cup before she goes to sleep, and we could fuck in bed beside her without her waking." She giggled. "Maybe we should, some night. Would my lord like that?"
Her hand found his shoulder and began to knead the muscles there.
"Your neck is hard as stone. What troubles you?"
Tyrion could not see his fingers in front of his face, but he ticked his woes off on them all the same.
"My wife, my sister, my nephew, my father, the Tyrells." He had to move to the other hand. "Varys, Pycelle, Littlefinger, the Red Viper of Dawn."
He had come to his last finger.
"The face that stares back out of the water when I wash."
Shay kissed his maimed, scarred nose.
"A brave face, a kind and good face. I wish I could see it now."
All the sweet innocence of the world was in her voice.
"Innocence? Fool, she's a whore. All she knows of men is the bit between their legs. Fool, fool."
"Better you than me," Tyrion said. "We have a long day before us, both of us.
You shouldn't have blown out that taper. How are we to find our clothing?"
She laughed.
"Maybe we'll have to go naked. And if we're seen, my lord father will hang you."
Hiring Shay as one of Sansa's maids had given him an excuse to be seen talking with her, but Tyrion did not delude himself that they were safe. Varys had warned him.
"I gave Shay a false history, but it was meant for Lollies and Lady Tender. Your sister is of more suspicious mind. If she should ask me what I know..."
"You will tell her some clever lie."
"No, I will tell her that the girl is a common camp follower that you acquired before the battle on the Green Fork and brought to King's Landing against your lord father's express command. I will not lie to the queen."
"You have lied to her before? Shall I tell her that?"
The eunuch sighed.
"That cuts more deeply than a knife, my lord. I have served you loyally, but I must also serve your sister when I can. How long do you think she would let me live if I were of no further use to her whatsoever. I have no fierce sellsword to protect me, no valiant brother to avenge me, only some little birds who whisper in my ear. With those whisperings, I must buy my life anew each day. Pardon me if I do not weep for you. I shall, but you must pardon me if I do not weep for Shay. I confess I do not understand what there is in her to make a clever man like you act such a fool. You might, if you were not a eunuch. Is that the way of it? A man may have wits or a bit of meat between his legs, but not both. Varys tittered. Perhaps I should be grateful I was cut then.
The spider was right. Tyrion groped through the dragon-haunted darkness for his small clothes, feeling wretched. The risk he was taking left him tight as a drumhead, and there was guilt as well. The others can take my guilt, he thought, as he slipped his tunic over his head. Why should I feel guilty? My wife wants no part of me, and most especially not the part that seems to want her. Perhaps he ought to tell her about Shay. It was not as though he was the first man ever to keep a concubine. Sansa's own oh-so-honourable father had given her a bastard brother. For all he knew, his wife might be thrilled to learn that he was fucking Shay, so long as it spared her his unwelcome touch. No, I dare not. Vows or no, his wife could not be trusted. She might be maiden between her legs, but she was hardly innocent of betrayal. She had once spilled her own father's plans to Cersei, and girls her age were not known for keeping secrets. The only safe course was to rid himself of Shay. I might send her to Shataya, Tyrion reflected, reluctantly. In Shataya's brothel, Shay would have all the silks and gems she could wish for, and the gentlest, high-born patrons. It would be a better life by far than the one she had been living when he found her. Or, if she was tired of earning her bread on her back, he might arrange a marriage for her. Bronn, perhaps. The sellsword had never balked at eating off his master's plate, and he was a knight now, a better match than she could elsewise hope for. Or Sir Talad. Tyrion had noticed that one gazing wistfully at Shay more than once. Why not? He's tall, strong, not hard to look upon, every inch the gifted young knight. Of course, Talad knew Shay only as a pretty young lady's maid in service at the castle. If he wed her and then learned she was a whore.
My lord, where are you? Did the dragons eat you up?
No, here. He groped at a dragon's skull. I have found a shoe, but I believe it's yours.
My lord sounds very solemn. Have I displeased you?
No, he said too curtly. You always please me.
And therein is our danger. He might dream of sending her away at times like this, but that never lasted long. Tyrion saw her dimly through the gloom, pulling a woolen sock up a slender leg. I can see. A vague light was leaking through the row of long, narrow windows set high in the cellar wall. The skulls of the Targaryen dragons were emerging from the darkness around them, black amidst grey. Day comes too soon. A new day, a new year, a new century. I survived the Green Fork and the Blackwater. I can bloody well survive King Joffrey's wedding. Shay snatched her dress down off the dragon's tooth and slipped it over her head.
I'll go up first. Brella will want help with the bathwater.
She bent over to give him one last kiss upon the brow.
My giant of Lannister. I love you so.
And I love you as well, sweetling.
A whore she might well be, but she deserved better than what he had to give her. I will wed her to Sir Talad. He seems a decent man, and tall. Catelyn. As the host trooped down the causeway through the black bugs of the neck and spilled out into the riverlands beyond, Catelyn's apprehensions grew. She masked her fears behind a face kept still and stern, yet they were there, all the same, growing with every league they crossed. Her days were anxious, her nights restless, and every raven that flew overhead made her clench her teeth. She feared for her lord father, and wondered at his ominous silence. She feared for her brother Edmure, and prayed that the guards would watch over him if he must face the Kingslayer in battle. She feared for Ned, and her girls, and for the sweet sons she had left behind at Winterfell. And yet, there was nothing she could do for any of them. And so she made herself put all thought of them aside. "You must save your strength for Rob," she told herself. "He is the only one you can help. You must be as fierce and hard as the North, Catelyn Tully. You must be a Stark, for true now, like your son." Rob rode at the front of the column, beneath the flapping white banner of Winterfell. Each day he would ask one of his lords to join him, so they might confer as they marched. He honoured every man in turn, showing no favourites, listening as his lord father had listened, weighing the words of one against the other. "He has learned so much from Ned," she thought as she watched him. "But has he learned enough?" The Blackfish had taken 100 picked men and 100 swift horses and raced ahead to screen their movements and scout the way. The reports Sir Brynden's riders brought back did little to reassure her. Lord Tywin's host was still many days to the south, but Walder Frey, Lord of the Crossing, had assembled a force of near 4,000 men at his castles on the Green Fork. "Late again," Catelyn murmured when she heard it. It was the Trident all over. Damn the man! Her brother Edmure had called the banners. By rights, Lord Frey should have gone to join the Tully host at Riverrun, yet here he sat. 4,000 men, Rob repeated, more perplexed than angry. Lord Frey cannot hope to fight the Lannisters by himself. Surely he means to join his power to ours. Does he? Catelyn asked. She had ridden forward to join Rob and Robert Glover, his companion of the day. The vanguard spread out behind them, a slow-moving forest of lances and banners and spears. "I wonder. Expect nothing of Walder Frey, and you will never be surprised. He is your father's bannerman. Some men take their oaths more seriously than others, Rob, and Lord Walder was always friendlier with Castle Rock than my father would have liked. One of his sons is wed to Tywin Lannister's sister. That means little of itself, to be sure. Lord Walder has sired a great many children over the years, and they must needs marry someone. Still, do you think he means to betray us to the Lannisters, my lady?" Robert Glover asked gravely. Catelyn sighed. "If truth be told, I doubt even Lord Frey knows what Lord Frey intends to do. He has an old man's caution and a young man's ambition, and he has never lacked for cunning." "We must have the twins, mother," Rob said heatedly. "There is no other way across the river, you know that." "Yes, and so does Walder Frey, you can be sure of that." That night they made camp on the southern edge of the Bugs, halfway between the King's Road and the river. It was there Theon Greyjoy brought them further word from her uncle. "Sir Brynden says to tell you he's crossed swords with the Lannisters. There are a dozen scouts who won't be reporting back to Lord Tywin any time soon, or ever," he grinned. "Sir Adam Marbrand commands their outriders, and he's pulling back south, burning as he goes. He knows where we are, more or less, but the Blackfish vows he will not know when we split." "Unless Lord Frey tells him," Catelyn said sharply. "Theon, when you return to my uncle, Tell him he is to place his best bowmen around the twins day and night, with orders to bring down any raven they see leaving the battlements. I want no birds bringing word of my son's movements to Lord Tywin.
Sir Brynden has seen to it already, my lady,
Theon replied, with a cocky smile.
A few more blackbirds, and we should have enough to bake a pie. I'll save you their feathers for a hat.
She ought to have known that Brynden Blackfish would be well ahead of her. What have the Freys been doing while the Lannisters burn their fields and plunder their holdfasts?
There's been some fighting between Sir Adam's men and Lord Walder's,
Theon answered.
Not a day's ride from here. We found two Lannister scouts feeding the crows, where the Freys had strung them up. Most of Lord Walder's strength remains massed at the twins, though.
That bore Walder Frey's seal beyond a doubt, Catelyn thought bitterly. Hold back, wait, watch. Take no risks unless forced to. If he's been fighting the Lannisters, perhaps he does mean to hold his vows, Rob said. Catelyn was less encouraged. Defending his own lands is one thing, open battle against Lord Tywin quite another. Rob turned back to Theon Greyjoy. Has the Blackfish found any other way across the Green Fork? Theon shook his head.
The river's running high and fast. Sir Brynden says it can't be forded. Not this far north.
I must have that crossing, Rob declared, fuming. Oh, our horses might be able to swim the river, I suppose, but not with armored men on their backs. We'd need to build rafts to pole our steel across, helms and mail and lances, and we don't have the trees for that. Or the time. Lord Tywin is marching north. He balled his hands into a fist.
Lord Frey would be a fool to try and bar our way, Theon Greyjoy said, with his customary easy confidence. We have five times his numbers. You can take the twins if you need to, Rob.
Not easily, Catelyn warned them. And not in time. While you were mounting your siege, Tywin Lannister would bring up his host and assault you from the rear. Rob glanced from her to Greyjoy, searching for an answer, and finding none. For a moment he looked even younger than his 15 years, despite his mail and sword and the stubble on his cheeks. What would my lord father do? He asked her. Find a way across, she told him, whatever it took. The next morning, it was Sir Brynden Tully himself who rode back to them. He had put aside the heavy plate and helm he'd worn as the Knight of the Gate for the lighter leather and mail of an outrider, but his obsidian fish still fastened his cloak. Her uncle's face was grave as he swung down off his horse.
"There has been a battle under the walls of Riverrun," he said, his mouth grim. "We had it from a Lannister outrider we took captive. The Kingslayer has destroyed Edmure's host and sent the Lords of the Trident reeling in flight."
A cold hand clutched at Catelyn's heart. "And my brother?"
"Wounded and taken prisoner," Sir Brynden said. "Lord Blackwood and the other survivors are under siege inside Riverrun, surrounded by Jaime's host."
Rob looked fretful. "We must get across this accursed river if we'd have any hope of relieving them in time."
"That will not be easily done," her uncle cautioned. "Lord Frey has pulled his whole strength back inside his castles, and his gates are closed and barred."
"Damn the man," Rob swore. "If the old fool does not relent and let me cross, he'll leave me no choice but to storm his walls. I'll pull the twins down around his ears if I have to. We'll see how well he likes that." "You sound like a sulky boy, Rob," Catelyn said sharply. "A child sees an obstacle, and his first thought is to run around it or kick it down. A lord must learn that sometimes words can accomplish what swords cannot." Rob's neck reddened at the rebuke. "Tell me what you mean, Mother," he said meekly. The Freys have held the crossing for 600 years, and for 600 years they have never failed to extract their toll. What toll? What does he want? She smiled. That is what we must discover. And what if I do not choose to pay this toll? Then you had best retreat back to Moat Cailin, deploy to meet Lord Tywin in battle, or grow wings. I see no other choices. Catelyn put her heels to her horse and rode off, leaving her son to ponder her words. It would not do to make him feel as if his mother were usurping his place. "Did you teach him wisdom as well as valour, Ned?" she wondered. "Did you teach him how to kneel?" The graveyards of the Seven Kingdoms were full of brave men who had never learned that lesson. It was near midday when the vanguard came in sight of the twins, where the lords of the crossing had their seat. The Green Fork ran swift and deep here, but the Freys had spent it many centuries past and grown rich off the coin men paid them to cross. Their bridge was a massive arch of smooth grey rock, wide enough for two wagons to pass abreast. The water tower rose from the centre of the span, commanding both road and river with its arrow slits, murder holes, and portcullises. It had taken the Freys 3 generations to complete their bridge. When they were done, they'd thrown up stout timber keeps on either bank, so no one might cross without their leave. The timber had long since given way to stone. The twins, 2 squat, ugly, formidable castles, identical in every respect, with a bridge arching between, had guarded the crossing for centuries. High curtain walls, deep moats, and heavy oak and iron gates protected the approaches. The bridge footings rose from within the stout inner keeps. There was a barbican and portcullis on either bank, and the water tower defended the span itself. One glance was sufficient to tell Catelyn that the castle would not be taken by storm. The battlements bristled with spears and swords and scorpions. There was an archer at every crenel and arrow slit. The drawbridge was up, the portcullis down, the gates closed and barred. The Great John began to curse and swear as soon as he saw what awaited them. Lord Rickard Carstark glowered in silence.
"That cannot be assaulted, my lords," Roose Bolton announced.
"Nor can we take it by siege, without an army on the far bank to invest the other castle," Helmand Tallheart said gloomily. Across the deep-running green waters, the western twin stood like a reflection of its eastern brother. "Even if we had the time, which to be sure we do not." As the northern lord studied the castle, a sally port opened. A plank bridge slid across the moat, and a dozen knights rode forth to confront them, led by 4 of Lord Walder's many sons. Their banner bore twin towers, dark blue, on a field of pale silver grey. Sir Stevron Frey, Lord Walder's heir, spoke for them. The Freys all looked like weasels. Sir Stevron, past 60, with grandchildren of his own, looked like an especially old and tired weasel. Yet he was polite enough.
"My lord father has sent me to greet you and inquire as to who leads this mighty host."
"I do." Rob spurred the horse forward. He was in his armour, with a direwolf shield of Winterfell strapped to his saddle and Grey Wind padding by his side. The old knight looked at her son with a faint flicker of amusement in his watery grey eyes, though his gelding wickered uneasily and sidled away from the direwolf.
"My lord father would be most honoured if you would share meat and mead with him in the castle and explain your purpose here."
His words crashed among the lord's bannermen like a great stone from a catapult. Not one of them approved. They cursed, argued, shouted down each other.
"You must not do this, my lord," Galbert Glover pleaded with Rob. "Lord Walder is not to be trusted."
Roose Bolton nodded.
"Go in there alone, and you're his. He can sell you to the Lannisters, throw you in a dungeon, or slit your throat, as he likes.
If he wants to talk to us, let him open his gates, and we will all share his meat and mead, declared Sir Wendell Manderley. Or let him come out and treat with Rob here, in plain sight of his men and ours, suggested his brother, Sir Willis.
Catelyn Stark shared all their doubts, but she had only to glance at Sir Stevron to see that he was not pleased by what he was hearing. A few more words, and the chance would be lost. She had to act, and quickly. "I will go," she said loudly.
"You, my lady?" The great John furrowed his brow.
"Mother, are you certain?" Clearly Rob was not.
"Nevermore," Catelyn lied glibly. "Lord Walder is my father's bannerman. I have known him since I was a girl. He would never offer me any harm."
"Unless he saw some profit in it," she added silently, but some truths did not bear saying, and some lies were necessary.
"I am certain my lord father would be pleased to speak to the Lady Catelyn," Sir Stevron said. "To vouchsafe for our good intentions, my brother Sir Perwin will remain here until she is safely returned to you."
"He shall be our honoured guest," said Rob. Sir Perwin, the youngest of the four Freys in the party, dismounted and handed the reins of his horse to a brother.
"I require my lady mother's return by evenfall, Sir Severin," Rob went on. "It is not my intent to linger here long." Sir Severin Frey gave a polite nod.
"As you say, my lord."
Catelyn spurred her horse forward and did not look back. Lord Walder's sons and envoys fell in around her. Her father had once said of Walder Frey that he was the only lord in the Seven Kingdoms who could field an army out of his breeches. When the Lord of the Crossing welcomed Catelyn into the great hall of the East Castle, surrounded by 20 living sons, minus Sir Perwin, who would have made 21, 36 grandsons, 19 great-grandsons, and numerous daughters, granddaughters, bastards, and grandbastards, she understood just what he had meant. Lord Walder was 90, a wizened pink weasel with a bald, spotted head, too gouty to stand unassisted. His newest wife, a pale, frail girl of 16 years, walked beside his litter while they carried him in. She was the 8th Lady Frey.
"It is a great pleasure to see you again after so many years, my lord," Catelyn said. The old man squinted at her suspiciously.
"Is it? I doubt that. Spare me your sweet words, Lady Catelyn. I'm too old. Why are you here? Is your boy too proud to come before me himself? What am I to do with you?"
Catelyn had been a girl the last time she had visited the twins, but even then Lord Walder had been irascible, sharp of tongue, and blunt of manner. Age had made him worse than ever, it would seem. She would need to choose her words with care and do her best to take no offence from his.
"Father," Sir Stevron said reproachfully, "you forget yourself. Lady Stark is here at your invitation." "Did I ask you? You're not Lord Frey yet. Not until I die. Do I look dead? I'll hear no instruction from you."
"This is no way to speak in front of our noble guest, father," one of his younger sons said.
"Now, my bastards, presume to teach me courtesy,"
Lord Walder complained.
"I'll speak any way I like, damn you. I've had 3 kings to guest in my life, and queens as well. Do you think I'd require lessons from the likes of you, Rhaegar? Your mother was milking goats the first time I gave her my seed."
He dismissed the red-faced youth with a flick of his fingers and gestured to 2 of his other sons.
"Danwell, Whelan, help me to my chair."
They shifted Lord Walder from his litter
and carried him to the high seat of the frays, a tall chair of black oak whose back was carved in the shape of two towers linked by a bridge. His young wife crept up timidly and covered his legs with a blanket. When he was settled, the old man beckoned Catelyn forward and planted a papery dry kiss on her hand.
"There," he announced. "Now that I have observed the courtesies, my lady, perhaps my sons will do me the honour of shutting their mouths. Why are you here?"
"To ask you to open your gates, my lord," Catelyn replied politely. "My son and his lord's bannermen are most anxious to cross the river and be on their way."
"To River Run?" he sniggered. "Oh, no need to tell me, no need. I'm not blind yet. The old man can still read a map."
"To River Run," Catelyn confirmed. She saw no reason to deny it. "Where I might have expected to find you, my lord. You are still my father's bannerman, are you not?"
"Heh," said Lord Walder, a noise halfway between a laugh and a grunt. "I called my sword, yes, I did. Here they are. You saw them on the walls. It was my intent to march as soon as all my strength was assembled. Well, to send my sons. I'm well past marching myself, Lady Catelyn."
He looked around for likely confirmation and pointed to a tall, stooped man of 50 years.
"Tell her, Jared. Tell her. That was my intent."
"It was, my lady," said Sir Jared Frey, one of his sons by his second wife, "on my honour."
"Is it my fault that your fool brother lost his battle before we could march?"
He leaned back against his cushions and scowled at her, as if challenging her to dispute his version of events.
"I am told the Kingslayer went through him like an axe through ripe cheese. Why should my boys hurry south to die? All those who did go south are running north again."
Catelyn would gladly have spitted the querulous old man and roasted him over a fire, but she had only till evenfall to open the bridge. Calmly she said, "All the more reason that we must reach River Run and soon. Where can we go to talk, my lord?"
"We're talking now,"
Lord Frey complained. The spotted pink head snapped around.
"What are you all looking at?"
he shouted at his kin.
"Get out of here. Lady Stark wants to speak to me in private. Might be she has designs on my fidelity. Eh? Go, all of you. Find something useful to do. Yes, you too, woman. Out, out, out!"
As his sons and grandsons and daughters and bastards and nieces and nephews streamed from the hall, he leaned close to Catelyn and confessed.
"They're all waiting for me to die. Stevron's been waiting for 40 years. But I keep disappointing him, eh? Why should I die just so he can be a lord, I ask you? I won't do it."
"I've every hope that you will live to be 100.
"Eh, that would boil them, to be sure. Oh, to be sure. Now what do you want to see?"
"We want to cross," Catelyn told him.
"Oh, do ye? That's blunt. Why should I let you?"
For a moment her anger flared. "If you were strong enough to climb your own battlements, Lord Frey, you would see that my son has 20,000 men outside your walls."
"There'll be 20,000 fresh corpses when Lord Tywin gets here,"
the old man shot back.
"Don't sit there and frighten me, my lady. Your husband's in some traitor's cell under the Red Keep. Your father's sick, might be dying. And Jamie Lannister's got your brother in chains. What do you have that I should fear, eh? That son of yours? I'll match you son for son, and I'll still have 18 when yours are all dead."
"You swore an oath to my father," Catelyn reminded him. He bobbed his head side to side, smiling.
"Oh, yes, I said some words, but I swore oaths to the crown, too, it seems to me. Joffrey's the king now, and that makes you and your boy and all those fools out there no better than rebels. If I had the sense the gods gave a fish, I'd help the Lannisters boil you all."
"Why don't you?" she challenged him. Lord Walder snorted with disdain.
"Lord Tywin, the proud and splendid, warden of the West, hand of the king, oh, what a great man that one is. Him and his gold this and gold that, and lions here and lions there. I'll wager you he eats too many beans. He breaks wind just like me, but you'll never hear him admit it. Oh, no. What's he got to be so puffed up about, anyway? Only two sons, and one of them's a twisted little monster. I'll match him, son for son, and still have 19 and a half left, when all of his are dead." He cackled. "If Lord Tywin wants my help, he can bloody well ask for it."
That was all Catelyn needed to hear. "I am asking for your help, my lord," she said humbly. "And my father, and my brother, and my lord husband, and my sons are asking with my voice." Lord Walder jabbed a bony finger at her face.
"Save your sweet words, my lady. Sweet words I get from me wife. Did you see her, eh? 16 she is, a little flower, and her honey's only for me. I wager she gives me a son by this time next year. Perhaps I'll make him heir. Wouldn't that boil the rest of them?"
"I'm certain she will give you many sons." His head bobbed up and down.
"Your lord father did not come to the wedding. An insult, as I see it, even if he is dying. He never came to my last wedding either. He calls me the late Lord Frey, you know. Oh, does he think I'm dead? I'm not dead, and I promise you I'll outlive him as I outlived his father. Your family has always pissed on me. Don't deny it. Don't lie. You know it's true. Years ago, I went to your father and suggested a match between his son and my daughter. Why not? I had a daughter in mind, sweet girl, only a few years older than Edna, but if your brother didn't warm to her, I had others. He might have had young ones, old ones, virgins, widows, whatever he wanted. No, Lord Huster would not hear of it. Sweet words he gave me, excuses. But what I wanted was to get rid of a daughter. And your sister, that one, she's full as bad. Oh, it was, a year ago, no, more. John Arryn was still the king's hand, and I went to the city to see my sons ride in the tourney. Stevron and Jared are too old for the list now, but Danwell and Hosteen rode. Perwin as well. And a couple of my bastards tried the melee. If I'd known how they'd shame me, I would never have troubled myself to make the journey. Why'd I need to ride all that way to see Hosteen knocked off his horse by that Tyrell whelp? I ask you, the boy's half his age. Sir Daisy, they call him, something like that. And Danwell was unhorsed by a hedge knight. Some days I wonder if those two are truly mine. My third wife was a Crakehall. All of the Crakehall women are sluts. Well, never mind about that. She died before you were born. What do you care? I was speaking of your sister. I propose that Lord and Lady Arryn foster two of my grandsons at court and offer to take their own son to ward here at the Twins. Are my grandsons unworthy to be seen at the king's court? They are sweet boys, quiet and mannerly. Walder is Merritt's son, named after me. and the other one, I don't recall. He might have been another Walder. They're always naming them Walder, so I'll favour them. But his father, which one was his father now?
His face wrinkled up.
Well, whoever he was, Lord Aaron wouldn't have him, or the other one. And I blame your lady's sister for that. She frosted up as if I'd suggested selling her boy to a mummer's show or making a eunuch out of him. And when Lord Aaron said the child was going to Dragonstone to foster with Stannis Baratheon, she stormed off without a word of regrets, and all the hand could give me was apologies. What good are apologies, I ask you?
Catelyn frowned, disquieted. I had understood that Lysa's boy was to be fostered with Lord Tywin at Casterly Rock.
No, it was Lord Stannis,
Alder Frey said irritably.
Do you think I can't tell Lord Stannis from Lord Tywin? They're both bungholes who think they're too noble to shit, but never mind about that. I know the difference. Or do you think I'm so old I can't remember? I'm 90, and I remember very well. I remember what to do with a woman, too. That wife of mine will give me a son before this time next year, I'll wager. Or a daughter. I can't be helped. Boy or girl, it will be red, wrinkled and squalling, and like as not, she'll want to name it Walder or Wilder.
Catelyn was not concerned with what Lady Frey might choose to name her child. John Arryn was going to foster his son with Lord Stannis? You're quite certain of that?
Yes, 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 the old man said. Only he died. So what does it matter? Eh? You say you want to cross the river.
We do.
Well, you can't,
Lord Walder announced crisply.
Not unless I allow it, and why should I? The Tullys and the Starks have never been friends of mine.
He pushed himself back in his chair and crossed his arms, smirking, waiting for her answer. The rest was only haggling. A swollen red sun hung low against the western hills when the gates of the castle opened. The drawbridge creaked down, the portcullis winched up, and Lady Catelyn Stark rode forth to rejoin her son and his lord's bannermen. Behind her came Sir Jared Frey, Sir Huston Frey, Sir Danwell Frey, and Lord Walder's bastard son, Ronald Rivers, leading a long column of pikemen, rank on rank of shuffling men in blue steel ringmail and silvery grey cloaks. Rob galloped out to meet her, with Grey Wynne racing beside his stallion. "It's done," she told him. "Lord Walder will grant you your crossing. His swords are yours as well. Less 400 he means to keep back to hold the twins. I suggest that you leave 400 of your own, a mixed force of archers and swordsmen. He can scarcely object to an offer to augment his garrison. But make certain you give the command to a man you can trust. Lord Walder may need help keeping faith." "As you say, Mother," Rob answered, gazing at the ranks of pikemen. "Perhaps Sir Helmund Tallheart, do you think? A fine choice. What did he want of us? If you can spare a few of your swords, I need some men to escort two of Lord Frey's grandsons north to Winterfell," she told him. "I have agreed to take them as wards. They are young boys, aged 8 years and 7. It would seem they are both named Walder. Your brother Bran will welcome the companionship of lads near his own age, I should think. Is that all? 2 fosterlings? That's a small enough price to—" "Lord Frey's son Oliver will be coming with us," she went on. "He is to serve as your personal squire. His father would like to see him knighted in good time." "A squire?" he shrugged. "Fine. That's fine if his—" "Also, if your sister Arya is returned to us safely, it is agreed that she will marry Lord Walder's youngest son, Elmer, when the two of them come of age." Rob looked nonplussed. Arya won't like that one bit. And you are to wed one of his daughters, once the fighting is done, she finished. His lordship has graciously consented to allow you to choose whichever girl you prefer. He has a number he thinks might be suitable. To his credit, Rob did not flinch. I see. Do you consent? Can I refuse? Not if you wish to cross. I consent, Rob said solemnly. He had never seemed more manly to her than he did at that moment. Boys might play with swords, but it took a lord to make a marriage pact, knowing what it meant. They crossed at evenfall, as a horned moon floated upon the river. The double column wound its way through the gate of the Eastern Twin like a great steel snake, slithering across the courtyard, into the keep, and over the bridge, to issue forth once more from the second castle on the west bank. Catelyn rode at the head of the serpent, with her son and her uncle, Sir Brynden and Sir Stevron Bray. Behind followed 9/10 of their horse, knights, lancers, free riders, and mounted bowmen. It took hours for them all to cross. Afterwards, Catelyn would remember the clatter of countless hooves on the drawbridge, the sight of Lord Walder Frey in his litter watching them pass, the glitter of eyes peering down through the slats of the murder holes in the ceiling as they rode through the water tower. The larger part of the northern hosts, pikes and archers and great masses of men-at-arms on foot, remained upon the east bank under the command of Roose Bolton. Rob had commanded him to continue the march south, to confront the huge Lannister army coming north under Lord Tywin. For good or ill, her son had thrown the dice.
Sansa. That was such a sweet dream, Sansa thought drowsily. She had been back in Winterfell, running through the Godswood with her lady. Her father had been there, and her brothers, all of them warm and safe. If only dreaming could make it so. She threw back the coverlets. I must be brave. Her torments would soon be ended, one way or the other. If Lady was here, I would not be afraid. Lady was dead, though. Rob, Bran, Rickon, Arya, her father, her mother, even Septa Mordaine. All of them dead, but me. She was alone in the world now. Her lord husband was not beside her, but she was used to that. Tyrion was a bad sleeper, and often rose before the dawn. Usually she found him in the solar, hunched beside a candle, lost in some old scroll or leather-bound book. Sometimes the smell of the morning bread from the ovens took him to the kitchens, and sometimes he would climb up to the roof garden or wander all alone down Traitor's Walk. She threw back the shutters and shivered as goose prickles rose along her arms. There were clouds massing in the eastern sky, pierced by shafts of sunlight. They looked like two huge castles afloat in the morning sky. Sansa could see their walls of tumble stone, their mighty keeps and barbicans. Wispy banners swirled from atop their towers and reached for the fast-fading stars. The sun was coming up behind them, and she watched them go from black to grey to a thousand shades of rose and gold and crimson. Soon the wind mushed them together, and there was only one castle where there had been two. She heard the door open as her maids brought the hot water for her bath. They were both new to her service. Tyrion said the women who tended her previously had all been Cersei's spies, just as Sansa had always suspected. "Come see," she told them. "There's a castle in the sky." They came to have a look. "It's made of gold." Shay had short, dark hair and bold eyes. She did all that was asked of her, but sometimes she gave Sansa the most insolent looks. "A castle all of gold. There's a sight I'd like to see."
A castle, is it?
Brella had to squint.
That tower's tumbling over. Looks like it's all ruins, that is.
Sansa did not want to hear about falling towers and ruined castles. She closed the shutters and said, We are expected at the Queen's breakfast. Is my lord husband in the solar?
No, my lady, said Brella. I have not seen him.
Might be he went to see his father, Shay declared. Might be the king's hand had need of his counsel.
Brella gave a sniff.
Lady Sansa, you'll be wanting to get into the tub before the water gets too cool.
Sansa let Shay pull her shift overhead and climbed into the big wooden tub. She was tempted to ask for a cup of wine to calm her nerves. The wedding was to be at midday in the great sept of Baelor across the city, and come evenfall the feast would be held in the throne room. 1,000 guests and 77 courses, with singers and jugglers and mummers. But first came breakfast in the Queen's ballroom for the Lannisters and the Tyrell men. The Tyrell women would be breaking their fast with Margaery, and 100 odd knights and lordlings. They have made me a Lannister, Sansa thought bitterly. Brella sent Shay to fetch more hot water while she washed Sansa's back.
You're trembling, my lady.
The water is not hot enough, Sansa lied. Her maids were dressing her when Tyrion appeared, Podrick Payne in tow. You look lovely, Sansa. He turned to his squire. Pod be so good as to pour me a cup of wine. There will be wine at breakfast, my lord, Sansa said. There's wine here. You don't expect me to face my sister sober, surely? It's a new century, my lady. The 300th year since Aegon's conquest. The dwarf took a cup of bread from Podrick and raised it high. To Aegon! What a fortunate fellow! Two sisters, two wives, and three big dragons. What more could a man ask for? He wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. The imp's clothing was soiled and unkempt, Sansa noticed. It looked as though he'd slept in it. Will you be changing into fresh garb, my lord? Your new doublet is very handsome. The doublet is handsome, yes. Tyrion put the cup aside. Come, Pod, let us see if we can find some garments to make me look less dwarfish. I would not want to shame my lady wife. When the imp returned a short time later, he was presentable enough, and even a little taller. Podrick Payne had changed as well, and looked almost a proper squire for once, although a rather large red pimple in the fold beside his nose spoilt the effect of his splendid purple, white, and gold raiment. He is such a timid boy. Sansa had been wary of Tyrion's squire at first. He was a Payne, cousin to Sir Ilyan Payne, who had taken her father's head off. However, she had soon come to realize that Pod was as frightened of her as she was of his cousin. Whenever she spoke to him, he turned the most alarming shade of red. "Are purple, gold, and white the colors of House Payne, Podrick?" she asked him politely. "No, I mean, yes," he blushed. "The colors, our arms are purple and white checky, my lady, with gold coins in the checks, purple and white, both." He studied her feet. "There's a tale behind those coins," said Tyrion. "No doubt Pod will confide it to your toes one day. Just now we are expected at the Queen's ballroom, however. Shall we?" Sansa was tempted to beg off. "I could tell him that my tummy was upset, or that my moon's blood had come." She wanted nothing more than to crawl back in bed and pull the drapes. "I must be brave, like Rob," she told herself as she took her lord husband stiffly by the arm. In the Queen's ballroom they broke their fast on honey cakes baked with blackberries and nuts, gammon steaks, bacon, fingerfish crisped in breadcrumbs, autumn pears, and a Dornish dish of onions, cheese, and chopped eggs cooked up with fiery peppers. "Nothing like hearty breakfast to whet one's appetite for the 77-course feast to follow," Tyrion commented
as their plates were filled. There were flagons of milk and flagons of mead, and flagons of a light sweet golden wine to wash it down. Musicians strolled among the tables, piping and fluting and fiddling, while Sodontus galloped about on his broomstick horse, and Moonboy made farting sounds with his cheeks and sang rude songs about the guests. Tyrion scarce touched his food, Sansa noticed, though he drank several cups of the wine. For herself she tried a little of the Dornish eggs, but the peppers burned her mouth. Otherwise she only nibbled at the fruit and fish and honey cakes. Every time Joffrey looked at her, her tummy got so fluttery that she felt as though she'd swallowed a bat. When the food had been cleared away, the queen solemnly presented Joff with the wife's cloak that he would drape over Margaery's shoulders. "It is the cloak I donned when Robert took me for his queen, the same cloak my mother Lady Joanna wore when wed to my lord father." Sansa thought it looked threadbare, if truth be told, but perhaps because it was so used. Then it was time for gifts. It was traditional in the Reach to give presents to bride and groom on the morning of their wedding. On the morrow they would receive more presents as a couple, but today's tokens were for their separate persons. From Jalabar Zoe, Joffrey received a great bow of golden wood and quiver of long arrows fletched with green and scarlet feathers. From Lady Tanda, a pair of supple riding boots. From Sir Kevin, a magnificent red leather jousting saddle. A red gold brooch, wrought in the shape of a scorpion, from the Dornishman, Prince Oberon. Silver spurs from Sir Adam Marbrant. A red silk tawny pavilion from Lord Mathis Rowan. Lord Paxter Redwine brought forth a beautiful wooden model of the war galley of 200 oars being built even now on the Arbor. "If it please your grace, she would be called King Joffrey's Valor," he said, and Joffrey allowed that he was very pleased indeed. "I will make it my flagship when I sail to Dragonstone to kill my traitor uncle Stannis," he said. "He plays the gracious king today." Joffrey could be gallant, when it suited him, Sansa knew, but it seemed to suit him less and less. Indeed, all his courtesy vanished at once when Tyrion presented him with their own gift, a huge old book called Lives of Four Kings, bound in leather and gorgeously illuminated. The king leafed through it with no interest. "And what is this, uncle?" "A book." Sansa wondered if Joffrey moved those fat, wormy lips of his when he read. "A Grand Maester case history of the reigns of Daeron the Young Dragon, Baelor the Blessed, Aegon the Unworthy, and Daeron the Good," her small husband answered. "A book every king should read, Your Grace," said Sir Kevin. "My father had no time for books." Joffrey shoved the tome across the table. "If you read less, Uncle Imp, perhaps Lady Sansa would have a baby in her belly by now." He laughed, and when the king laughs, the court laughs with him. "Don't be sad, Sansa. Once I've gotten Queen Margaery with child, I'll visit your bedchamber and show my little uncle how it's done." Sansa reddened. She glanced nervously at Tyrion, afraid of what he might say. This could turn as nasty as the bedding had at their own feast. But for once the dwarf filled his mouth with wine instead of words. Lord Mace Tyrell came forward to present his gift, a golden chalice 3 feet tall, with 2 ornate curved handles and 7 faces glittering with gemstones.
7 faces for your grace's 7 kingdoms, the bride's father explained.
He showed them how each face bore the sigil of one of the great houses. Ruby lion, emerald rose, onyx stag, silver trout, blue jade falcon, opal sun, and pearl direwolf.
"A splendid cup," said Joffrey, "but we'll need to chop the wolf off and put a squid in its place, I think."
Sansa pretended that she had not heard.
Marjorie and I shall drink deep at the feast, good father.
Joffrey lifted the chalice above his head for everyone to admire.
The damn thing's as tall as I am, Tyrion muttered in a low voice. Half a chalice, and Joff will be falling down drunk.
Good, she thought. Perhaps he'll break his neck.
Lord Tywin waited on